This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Institutional trust. We'll talk about that tonight. We didn't take part in that communist op, and we look good because of it. All that and so much more coming up tonight on I'm Right. Let's talk about COVID, shall we? Stop. I promise this is a modern day show. You're not watching some rerun. But before we get to COVID and the reckoning we need, I think it's important to discuss something we've talked about before on the show, but because it's happening to our country, it's happening really to so many countries right now, we have to discuss it. We have to know what is going on. First, countries, all countries, no matter what size, are held up by their institutions. It's institutions. Institutions that inform people, that train people, that produce the next generation of this or next generation of that, all kinds of different institutions, educational institutions and government institutions and entertainment institutions and religious institutions. These are the pillars that hold up a country. But something happens to all countries over time, really all of them. If a country lasts long enough, it's almost inevitable. The institutions that hold up the country will be taken over by corrupt, selfish, evil people, and they will rot out the institution. And once the institution gets rotted out, well, again, those are the pillars that hold up a country. The country will begin to crumble as the institutions begin to crumble. Now, this becomes magnified in communist countries because communists have always believed that you take over these institutions. The communist knows what I just told you is true. He's always known it. The institutions hold up the country. So you have to take them over. You conquer these institutions. Now, we here in the United States of America, we don't trust our institutions anymore. And look, it's really all of them. We're going to talk about COVID and our media institutions and government institutions, our medical institutions, but it's really all of them. And you're starting to see poll numbers, news stories about this, about the institutional trust that has been lost. The American people do not believe it when the FBI says something. They don't believe it when CNN says something. They don't believe it when the CDC says something. But why? Why don't you believe them? Is it you? Are you just growing old and cynical like I am? Of course not. It's not you. Once trust has been violated, almost impossible to earn it back. Once I lie to you, that's why we try to never do that on the show. Once I lie to you, then you don't believe what I say anymore about anything. I could tell you the sky is blue, and you'll be skeptical because I've lied to you. Which brings me to COVID. You remember this stuff, right?
Here's what I want you and America to know. Those projections are definitely sobering, but they don't have to be our reality. If we really do our part, stay at home, social distance, then we can flatten our curve even below those projections.
Social distancing is absolutely critical. And if you can't social distance and you're outside, you must wear a mask.
Other than wearing masks, washing hands, avoiding crowds, and social distancing, what more on a policy level do we in the United States need to be doing?
Well, what we've got to do is make what you just said, Jake, uniform, not spotty. Everybody's got to do it. There's no excuse not to do that right now, because we know that can turn things around.
The media, medical professionals, politicians all across the country. Social distancing, social distancing. Wear a mask when you're outside. Social distancing. But let's remember the fallout from that. Why did your child's school close? Why did your child forget how to read? Miss graduation. Had their senior year of sports canceled. It's because of social distancing. Because of the idea that you should stand 6 feet away from everybody in society, as if you can structure a society like that ever. Why did they take down the outdoor basketball hoops in my area? Social distancing. My governor, Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott, told restaurants to close. That family business of yours, shut it down. Why? Social distancing. Why do you still have those now slightly faded footprints in the grocery store where you're supposed to stand and then someone else stands up there? Social distancing. We completely reordered a society of 300 million people because of the idea of social distancing. Wow. How did they come up with that idea?
And the 6 feet is a perfect example of sort of the lack of rigor around how CDC made recommendations. Nobody knows where it came from. Most people assume that the 6 feet of distance, the recommendation for keeping 6 feet apart, comes out of some old studies related to flu, where droplets don't travel more than 6 feet. We now know COVID spreads through aerosols. The initial recommendation that the CDC brought to the White House, and I talk about this, was 10 feet. And a political appointee in the White House said, we can't recommend 10 feet. Nobody can measure 10 feet. It's inoperable. Society will shut down. So the compromise was around 6 feet.
Oh, they made it up. No one even knows where it came from. Maybe an old study on the flu. Your school, your business, your life, your outdoor basketball hoop, a $20 trillion economy destroyed, and our institutions made up the reason why. That wasn't the only thing they made up. Let's drill down for a moment. Believe me, we're going to get to the modern news. Let's drill down for a moment on the masks. Remember what they said about the masks and children?
What about children who are between the ages of 0 and 12? And, you know, we have to treat them as unvaccinated. So, yes, those children still do have to wear a mask to protect themselves.
If the child, which obviously elementary school kids are not vaccinated, they should wear a mask. And I'd be almost guarantee that most of the schools are going to say you have to wear a mask.
Every student wear a mask. It's that simple.
What masks do is mask stop transmission. So universal masking is going to be very helpful to keep kids safe.
We are not doing enough. We have these restrictions in place for a reason, but I think people may not be taking it seriously, as in schools are closed, but parents are still getting kids together for play dates. That shouldn't happen.
That mask never did anything. This cloth mask, this stupid paper mask with the holes out the side, the ones we all had to wear, didn't do a single thing, ever. Didn't do a thing. And our institutions told us we had to do it, otherwise you'll spread the virus. Yes, the paper mask does a lot to stop the microscopic virus. But it wasn't just the distancing, it wasn't just the masks, you see. The vaccine. See, the vaccine, interesting they even called it that. They told many, many, many lies about it, which we'll get to in a moment, but initially they told us that they couldn't trust it. You couldn't trust it. It took place under Donald Trump. It's Donald Trump's vaccine. And then the second it came out, they told you, you really should get it. You better get it. You should get it. Then they tried to tell you you had to get it. Then they tried to fire you if you didn't get it. And they insisted it was safe. They insisted it was effective. They insisted it was safe. They insisted it was effective. Over and over and over and over and over again, we had this propaganda.
The thing that went right was the investment over decades in the basic and clinical biomedical research
that allowed us to make a vaccine in unprecedented time of less than a year that turned out to be safe and highly effective.
They are safe and so effective.
We know that vaccines are safe and effective.
The data is so compelling that these vaccines are safe and effective.
Vaccination not only prevents you from acquiring severe illness, but we now know with certainty that it largely prevents transmission.
My gut feeling is that these vaccines prevent infection and therefore will prevent transmission.
The vaccine not only prevents people from getting sick, it also prevents transmission of the virus from person to person.
We're vaccinating so very fast. Our data from the CDC today suggests that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick, and that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real world data.
FDA just announced 10 children that they know of so far died from it. Remember that children were never in any kind of danger from COVID-19. It was not at all a disease that affected children, just was not. And yet the institutions you should be able to trust repeatedly told you that you had to go get Aiden, Jaden, and Braden injected with something experimental. And it killed children in this country. Killed children. The reason I wanted to do this little rant before we move on and talk about so many other things is a huge reason institutional trust is broken and gone in this country, and I don't see it coming back, is we have never had a reckoning for the endless lies told to the American people. The American people who've been harmed physically, killed, economies destroyed, personal livelihoods destroyed, education destroyed. We have never had any kind of a reckoning. Almost every person you've seen in these videos is wealthy, prosperous, moving on. Many got promoted, retiring in luxury. They all had that golden parachute after destroying institutional trust and destroying your life. Do you remember this video from the New York State Department of Health?
When I talk to my friends and family, I say, look, I got vaccinated and I got my kids vaccinated. What more do you need to know?
Every single member of my family is fully vaccinated and boosted.
I would never recommend something if I didn't think it was safe for my own children, and my children were vaccinated as soon as they could be.
As the kids in my practice say, I am vaxxed to the max.
I have 3 kids. I have vaccinated all of them. I would never do anything to my children that wasn't perfectly safe.
One of the doctors in that video, I want to make sure I read this, just received the prestigious Lifetime Achievement Award for advocacy on behalf of vulnerable children. The institutions you should be able to trust lied to your face, destroyed your life, and then gave each other awards for it. We need a reckoning. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We're going to talk about Republicans and accountability with Wade Miller next. But I, you know what? If I have to give some sort of a thumbs up to the COVID era, at least it caused so much distrust with me and the medical industry that I have sought out natural solutions to prevent me from having to go to the doctor. That's a big part of why I take cowboy colostrum every morning. Cowboy colostrum, I put 2 scoops of it in my coffee every morning. I have a chocolate. They have vanilla. They have strawberry. I get the chocolate, so I essentially have a chocolate cup of coffee in the morning, but it's not there for the flavor, although it is delicious. My gut feels so much freaking better. And every day, I'm serious, I think about it. Every day when I'm having that cup of coffee, I think to myself, good, maybe this puts off that necessary doctor's visit for a little while longer. Go to cowboycolostrum.com and use the code JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, I want you to reach back. I want you to reach over your shoulder right now and pat yourself on the back, because remember that conversation we had yesterday about how you never, ever, ever take part in communist ops because you recognize them for what they are? I know you didn't, especially after our talk last night. Congratulations. You are significantly smarter and braver than most of the elected GOP. Joining me now, Wade Miller, senior advisor at the Center for Renewing America, also United States Marine. Wade, it was very clearly a communist op. Well, I guess is a communist op. They're running against Pete Hegseth. Anyone with two brain cells, and well, I won't go into what else you have to recognize it. But why can't the GOP recognize it, Wade?
They're just not in a wartime footing in terms of articulating the fight. I think that they have relied for far too long on the president and the vice president to lead the rhetorical argument against the left. And so, you know, we take out a couple of foreign terrorist operatives working with cartels who are invariably probably working with China to destabilize our communities through their operations. And it doesn't go perfectly according to the way they want it to go. And so they just completely start abandoning the fight and ceding the ground. And at the end of the day, what are we guilty of here? We're, you know, the Secretary of War ordered a strike on a foreign terrorist target in international waters. Big deal. Like, you know, this used to happen on a daily basis just a few years ago for the better part of 15 years.
Wade, The strikes themselves, we have 15,000 troops in the Caribbean. We have the Navy down there. Everyone knows the story. Trump made an announcement on social media that he's closing the airspace. It sure looks like Venezuela is going down. At least the regime is going down. At least that's how it appears right now. My concern is not the collapse of the Venezuelan regime. You can list all kinds of reasons why that would be a good thing. My concern is how the Trump administration is going to sell this to the American people, because the American people are done with foreign policy. They just are. Mm-hmm. They don't care about Ukraine. They don't care about Afghanistan. They don't care about Israel. They don't care about Venezuela. They don't even really care about Mexico. They care about the price of burger, and it's hard to make them care about anything else right now.
That's right. In the broader, you know, kind of conception of all of this, we're tired of forever wars. We're tired of nation building as a nation. And, you know, I think that the realist position here has long been that, you know, we're okay with military strikes, but they need to be in the interest of the United States, not running around chasing people that live in remote mountains on the other side of the planet for 20 years and spending $3 trillion. And by the way, not actually achieving the mission. They're still there and still control everything. And so I think that if they're going to move forward on this, I think that one of the things that they need to do is articulate the direct nexus to the U.S. interests. In other words, we're not isolationists, but we need a good reason. And if in lieu of a good reason, I think that there should be some restraint here. And perhaps, and look, this is part of the brilliance of the Trump administration, is sometimes they flex muscles just to try to avoid a broader conflict. And maybe that's what they're doing here. And or maybe there's intelligence assessments that would support this. But I do think that if we're going to engage in another significant military operation against a foreign nation, there needs to be some conversation about why that is necessary and why that is in our best interest.
Wade, do you get the impression the Trump administration, I know you have great sources on this stuff, that they want to go in, that they're afraid to go in, that they're hesitant to go in? What do they want versus what they're doing right now?
It's always tough to ascertain. But if I have to guess, My guess is that Trump would like to flex some muscle here to try to force the regime to voluntarily make some changes. He does this through tariff policy. He does this through other means as well. My guess is that they don't necessarily want to go to war, but my guess is that they probably have some intelligence reasons, some information about operations that they are either ongoing or coordinating with, perhaps with China, ongoing active efforts to destabilize American communities through fentanyl trade, et cetera. And maybe they've had enough. Maybe they've said 100,000 Americans dying a year is enough and we have to put a stop to this. And maybe that's part of their rationale. But my guess is that they would like this to end through coercion instead of actual force. But depending on what their objectives are, if that can't be met through coercion, perhaps they're ready to use force, but perhaps not. And that's part of the strategic ambiguity of the Trump administration, is we actually don't really ever really know what he's willing to do. And that's a good position to be in if you're a United States president trying to exert foreign policy influence.
Yeah, it is. Let's switch gears here. Today, everybody's an immigration hawk in the GOP. Everyone talks about deportations and things like that. you actually put up a wonderful social media post with some receipts. When we were bringing in as many Afghans as we possibly could into the United States of America, it wasn't every Republican standing against it. Far from it, was it, Wade?
No. In fact, we were probably in the extreme minority at the time when we were calling for, and we wrote a couple of papers on this at the time, saying that we shouldn't be bringing anyone here. We should be resettling these Afghans regionally, but in the area of Afghanistan, or as close as we can possibly get them, but definitely not in the United States. And look, a lot of guys were on the ground. I served in Iraq 3 times in the Horn of Africa. I was never in Afghanistan, but I've dealt with interpreters, and I've talked to a lot of Afghan veterans, combat veterans who dealt with interpreters and other people that worked with the United States government. And like, they fall into different categories, but like, even in the rosiest scenario, let's say that they dislike the Taliban and they wanted to succeed. That doesn't mean that they're culturally suitable for admittance into the United States. Something like 90%, 90 plus percent of Afghanistan, people who live in Afghans, they believe in killing apostates. They believe that people who lead the religion of Islam should be murdered. They believe that sometimes suicide bombings are justifiable. It's an absurd amount of the population there that is culturally radicalized. So just because they weren't part of the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or ISIS doesn't mean that they're not radically at odds with American culture and values. None of these people should have been brought here, but we were morally browbeat. These people stood up for us, fought for us. Well, first of all, no, we fought for them. We went to their country and helped their fighting age males have a chance at potentially at a future. I would argue that was always going to be a failed mission. They're not capable of sustaining democracy, but we died and bled and lost treasure and life helping them. We did them the favor. They owed us to help us to do that if they really believed in their country and getting rid of the Taliban. We don't owe them a damn thing. So I always objected to this browbeating, especially from other veterans, because they had one interpreter that they created a bond with, and all they talked about was, you know, soccer or something like that. But they never really got into it. Like, do you believe in Baka Bazi? Do you believe in child marriage? They never got into it with these people. And so we never should have brought any of these people over here. And we're now reaping, the rewards of bad policy in the form of people that are radicalized doing really bad things in our communities.
That's freaking terrible. Wade, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Well, you want to hear from someone who's on the back end of all this? The mass importation of foreigners, Islamists? Connor Tomlinson's in the UK, and he is, I mean, my heart breaks for the guy. Just like Tommy Robinson and those guys, they're just watching their country end. We'll talk to Connor about that in a moment. I want you to end something. I want you to end the purchase of gas station chips, grocery store chips. You don't need them. I would never have said that to you probably a year ago. I would have laughed in your face if you told me, well, there's healthier chip options, because I've tried a few of those and they're disgusting and I'm not going to eat anything gross. But kept hearing, massive chips. Okay, all right, fine. I get a few bags. Actually, I got like 4 bags. They have a bunch of different flavors. They're the best chips I've ever had in my entire life. It's just 3 ingredients. You can eat, imagine eating chips guilt-free. Best chips I've ever had in my entire life. And you don't feel gross when you're done. Imagine putting your feet up this Saturday, watching college football, laying waste to an entire bag of chips, guilt-free. Sound good? MassaChips.com/JesseTV saves you 25% on your first order. Go try a few bags. We'll be back.
You have lost. You lost. The mistake that you made is you let us in the first place. See, that's the thing with brown people. And I'm going to say this as a brown person. There's a lot of us. Like, a lot. There's like 1.2 billion in India. There's more than 200 million in Pakistan. There's like 170 million in Bangladesh. And those are just the people there. I'm not even talking about the folks who are expats or immigrants. There's a bunch of us. And we breed. We're a breeding people. And the problem is you let us in 1965. There were a few of us beforehand. But once you let one of us in, you know what happens with brown folks? Our grandmother comes, our grandfather comes, our uncle comes, our aunt comes, our second cousin comes, our third cousin comes. Then we have kids, a bunch of kids. I want you to realize this. You have lost. Your story is a shitty story filled with misery. It's filled with bland chicken. It's filled with terrible, terrible dry meat. Your music sucks. All your culture sucks.
Okay. Well, look, I'm going to try to use some modern language because I have two teenage sons and they're trying to get me up to speed and not sounding like an old man. You know what that's known as? That's known as rage bait, right? That's just designed to get a rise out of you. But there's some truth in it. And sadly, my friend Connor Tomlinson knows a bit of the truth of it. Joining me now, the host of Tomlinson Talks on YouTube, which is wonderful, by the way, Connor Tomlinson from across the pond. Connor, rage bait as it may be, he's not totally wrong, and you're experiencing it in your country, aren't you?
Sadly so, Jesse. I mean, far from me to agree with Wajahat Ali in the present, but the mistake was, and he's right, letting them in the first place. Because as much as this might be hyperbole, it would never occur to you or me, were we a guest in someone else's country, to speak in such terms, in such derisive terms, about the people of that country, at whose expense we are largely living. And make no mistake, Wajahat Ali is living at our expense because he has made a lucrative career until fairly recently when the New York Times doesn't want to publish him, writing anti-white hit pieces and talking about just how much better Muslims are than Christians in the United States, so pork-barreling a living off the back of insulting the identity and faith of heritage Americans and those of founding stock. And I tell you what, the Founding Fathers would not recognize him as one of your countrymen. And back in 2019, he was giving puff piece interviews to Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, saying that it is completely unfounded to say that Muslims across the world don't like America. Well, I tell you what, Wajahat, if I would have gone back in time and shown you this, turns out Muslims like yourself probably don't like America all that much by the sounds of it, especially when, again, in 2019, he blamed all people who have said that Islam might be incompatible with the United States for the Christchurch massacre in New Zealand at the time. So he is yet again demonstrating his willingness to attribute collective guilt and collective derision to white people despite sharing a country with them. As for the Pakistanis that share a country with me, Jesse, as you've pointed out, the Pakistani rape gang scandal is ongoing still in Britain. Despite being amplified back in January, the Labour government still hasn't appointed the head of the inquiry that they were dragged kicking and screaming to committing to. Five survivors have resigned from the panel, calling for the minister in charge, Jess Phillips, to resign. But Keir Starmer has said he retains confidence in Jess Phillips, despite her spending more time complaining about Elon Musk insulting her than on the inquiry itself. And advisors on the inquiry panel talked down to the survivors and told them, don't blame brown men for the abuse you suffered as a child, despite the gangs being overwhelmingly family and drug gang networks of Pakistani men with some other Muslims involved abusing white non-Muslim girls because explicitly they were white. Because they were not Muslim, the family members of the predators justified it because they didn't want to be seen as, quote, siding with the white enemy, and they blamed the girls because they dressed immodestly by Muslim standards, and as one perpetrator said in a transcript that's now been read out in Parliament, they were here to, quote, F white girls and F the government. That rhetoric sounds a hell of a lot like the sentiment that Ali was displaying there, just in more vindictive, vile, and violent fashion over in my country.
Connor, President Trump has started talking about something called remigration. Can you explain what that is, and can it potentially save places like not just America, the UK, which I would really love to see the UK turned around and saved? Can it save us? What is it?
Well, as would I, Jesse, and I'm very appreciative of your State Department as well as President Trump for sounding off on this issue. Remigration, if you go to Wikipedia, you would assume that it is a form of ethnic cleansing by white Europeans of minorities in their countries. So one would then have to ask, why was it not ethnic cleansing when unwanted immigrants came into our countries and pushed us out of our ancestral homelands, including London, which is now minority English? We don't actually know the share of English people living in London, but according to Piers Morgan, that's all totally fine, so he can eat his authentic curry. I don't think the food was worth all the rapes. Remigration simply means, in its most fair definition, the reversal of mass migration and unwanted demographic change by returning people, whether they arrived illegally or legally, who are not wanted in the country, to their nation of origin. And by that process, restoring sovereignty over the host nation to the indigenous population, reversing a kind of vindictive ethnic cleansing, the type that Ali, in the previous clip, seems to gloat about using migration to do. He sees migration as a form of demographic warfare on behalf of his co-ethnics. Well, I don't like losing a war, thank you very much, so we will opt for remigration to secure the security of our people instead. And so President Trump has said he is going to pursue a policy of reverse migration, remigration, for at least 19 of the countries listed on his travel ban list, stated earlier in the year. I would think he should add Pakistan and India to that list too, because they are third world countries. They exert a lot of ethno-narcissistic leverage over your domestic politics with the H-1B issue or Mr. Ali's presence in your country, and you can always leverage military aid that has been restarted to Pakistan after the aid ban earlier in the year in order to do that. But also the State Department has said, and officials have gone on record and said, the era of mass migration must end for Canada, the UK, the US, Europe, New Zealand, and Australia. And they sent out communiques to both their embassies and to the heads of governments in these countries to say, embassies, you need to start monitoring migrant crime, anti-white DEI policies, white flight, and consider all of these as human rights violations. But also to the governments like Keir Starmer, who is very sore about accusations of two-tier justice, you need to stop unduly penalizing the speech of your native population whenever they have a negative characterization of immigrant groups brought into their country at their expense against their wishes, while allowing immigrants who commit violent crimes to go free. And that's particularly pertinent at the moment because the State Department should be aware that our Justice Minister, David Lammy, who has called for reparations against whites in Britain for the sin of slavery, is about to abolish jury trials. He is about to remove jury trials in the country that gave the world, including our wonderful cousins across the pond, the presumption of innocence, Blackstone's formulation, and Magna Carta and common law. This tinpot anti-white racist is running our government alongside Keir Starmer and is about to abolish the ancient customs and liberties of Englishmen while letting migrant criminals get off scot-free. It is unacceptable, and I'm very thankful that President Trump and the State Department are pushing for this in your nation and mine, because it sure as hell isn't coming from our government.
Connor, you hang in there over there, my brother. I'm wishing you the best, as always. Wonderful. The problems sometimes, look, I go through the same thing you go through. Sometimes the problems, they seem insurmountable. They're not insurmountable, remember that. I have to tell myself that too. Some things take time, that's all. If you're 300 pounds and you want to get to 200 pounds, it's not an insurmountable problem, but you're not going to take care of it tonight. It's going to take time, all right? We'll keep working on it. Anyway, let's talk to Kay about that, because she fled Britain. Before we talk to Kay, let me talk to you about the night I had. I was up fairly late, I guess, for me. It was almost 10 o'clock. It's kind of wired. Wife and I were talking about it. It's kind of wired. I don't know why. I was worried I wasn't going to be able to sleep. Made myself a little cup of hot chocolate, though. A little cup of hot chocolate from Beam. It's called Dream Powder. And it's not drugs. 100% drug-free. But there are natural things in it that just kind of get you relaxed and ready to drift off to sleep. I sleep like a little baby when I have it. I think I slept for 10 hours last night. You want to sleep like that? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. All right, we're going to talk about universities here in a moment. But before we do that, I want to introduce my friend, you know her well on the show, Kay Smythe Hill, writer and social scientist. The reason I wanted to introduce Kay first is, Kay, what's a social scientist? That sounds like a lot of hippie gobbledygook.
It was actually what I was qualified under on my old visa It is kind of a little bit of gobbledygook, but I basically analyze groups of people down to the individual. My personal specialty is trying to mitigate the apocalypse, because most of the worst apocalypse catastrophes come from people being idiots. So that's what I study, and I put numbers and data towards it, so I can say definitively that people en masse are usually pretty stupid, especially at universities.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Speaking of stupid idiots who will probably bring about the apocalypse, let's talk about college-educated women, because these young women go to college and their motherly instincts, which are wonderful, are preyed upon by evil, filthy communists, and it's twisted and turned, and they turn them into the mother of the communist revolution, and it's freaking awful what happens to these young women, and then they hate themselves the rest of their life. What happened at the University of Oklahoma, by the way?
So we had a young woman who submitted a paper, albeit not the best paper I've ever read, but still, she submitted a term paper for her gender studies, bless her heart, course to her professor. So gender studies is like part of a psychology major, I guess. I don't know. Again, another reason why university is officially a waste of time and money these days and very stupid. But she submitted this term paper to her psych professor. But her psych professor is transgender and really didn't like the fact that this young woman sourced a lot of her evidence and a lot of her claims from the Bible. Now, Jesse, I could sit here and waffle on all day about how to write a great academic paper. I've ghostwritten many for many American students myself. It's a very easy thing to do if you know how to read and write. But this transgender person, firstly, why is a transgender person teaching psych? Surely you have to have decent psychology to be able to teach psychology. And if you can't even understand that you were born a specific type of gender, probably shouldn't be teaching psychology about it. You might have a couple of biases there that kind of render you ineffective in that setting. But yeah, she failed, or this man, I think it's a man pretending to be a woman, is the way that I read it. But this man pretending to be a woman failed a student because she sourced from the Bible and just really didn't like that. So there's now a huge discrimination case going on, and I hope the student gets everything she deserves for it, because it's ridiculous. And just, you know, again, bleeds into that stupid communist indoctrination nightmare apocalypse that goes on in most of our schools that we were just talking about. Just utterly stupid.
It does. It doesn't. It's weird that she'd be a psych professor. Shouldn't she be focusing on the kids who were undecided? See, anyway, okay. Where are the Christian leaders in all this? It seems like the LGBTQ demon mob tranny brigade, they're always happy to declare that it's an open war with God, open war with the Bible. And I don't see that same kind of vigor from the other side. Am I missing it?
Well, I think the other side, like all of us Christians, when you don't put yourself as your own God, it's actually a lot easier to live and be happy. So, Jesse, I was part of that liberal sort of social, stupid, university-educated type woman that you were talking about right at the start of the show. Actually, it was living in California that made me realize what an absolute lie that side of the political spectrum is, for myriad reasons, not just because of the way that they treat women. But it wasn't until I really honed in on my relationship with Christ that I ended up finding a type of peace that really can't be irked upon by people who parade around claiming to be, you know, the opposite gender to the one that they were at birth. You know, they sort of all fall into the same category that call us all like Nazis and fascists for having different opinions to them. It's kind of like a water off the duck's back effect. And so while I do think that it is a huge responsibility of Christian leaders to step up and protect young people from this indoctrination, we do have a lot of great schools in this country that do that. You know, GCU, Liberty, all of these different great universities that are Christian driven. We need to have it more normalized. And I don't really know what the answer is to that yet. I just pray that every single young woman goes through what I went through, has that sort of like come to light moment, gets red pilled, finds Christ. And it literally took, I think it took less than like 2 years from me leaning into my relationship with Christ, I met my husband. I'm now in my third trimester, and it is the best thing I have ever done. So much better than anything, no offense, work-related that I've ever done, except for obviously being on Jesse Kelly, duh.
Well, yeah, that's the highlight of your life. And for most people who don't realize it, the third trimester, there's only three of them. So that's the third one of these. Okay, before I let you go, Gavin Newsom, the story is out that he's swooping up mega donors on the Democrat ticket. It's kind of common now to look at Gavin Newsom and think he's got a real shot at being the Democrat nominee. Now, I find him to be repulsive with the hand talking and the slick back hair and everything else. But I'm also not the demographic that may swing one way or the other next election. Do women find this guy appealing?
I've never met a woman who finds this guy appealing. I think what Gavin Newsom presumes, like a lot of Democrats, is that all you have to get or all you have to be in order to be successful as a politician in this country on the Democrat liberal side is to have sort of like a lot of hair, big teeth. He's very loud. He sits like a girl. He's a compulsive liar. There are literally bodies lined up on the street in his state. Women in his state are some of the most victimized in the country, maybe even the Western Hemisphere, because of the policies that this guy has pushed. So I hope that all of this is just this sort of sicko, small world echo chamber that exists around Gavin Newsom, because as much as he might not realize it, he is part of the globalist elite. He's inherited that position. The only reason that he's sweeping up these donors is because there is literally no one else on the Democratic side right now. They're all actually more repulsive than him, if you can believe it, or just ridiculous and silly. Like, who's that one that's trying to get headlines right now? Cory Booker. No one believes anything that he's going through right now. But I think with Gavin Newsom, he probably believes that he has an appeal with women. In reality, that's not there. And I think if there were any women who were into it, it's those stupid elder boomers who don't get affected by the policies he pushed because they live in their private gated communities. And they're sort of like the six viewers left watching like MSNBC and CNN and stuff like that. So, you know, like en masse, no. To answer your question, no. He doesn't have an appeal amongst women. He's repulsive. And he hurts women with his policies. It's that simple.
For those who don't know, she's talking about Cory Booker and his beard. Kay, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood, and I'm going to stay calm, all right? We've had this conversation before. If you've watched this show for a while, you know we've had this conversation before, but there was a story out. It was this little video. I think it was ABC News who put it out, and there was a black bear. Black bear's standing there, a couple women looking at the black bear. One young lady kneels down and feeds the black bear. So, I just need to explain once again. Please, please hear me on this. Disney movies are fake. I know that you want to believe that as soon as we look away, that the animals, the lions get together with the zebras and they're talking and they're doing a little dance number and they're having fun together and they have these emotional relationship dramas and they're so fun and look at how squishy he is. I understand that a generation of Disney movies has taught people that wild animals are in fact human. They're human, just with more fur. Look how cute he is. The black bear will rip your freaking face off. And I mean that in every possible way. Black bears will kill you like that. They are wild, vicious animals with brains the size of a blueberry. All they know is to eat, sleep, and mate. That's all they know. I promise, no matter how much food you give the black bear, he just doesn't want to snuggle with you. He's not going to talk to you. I swear, he won't talk to you. You can't choreograph a dance routine with him. He's a wild animal. Please stop approaching wild animals. Please. I'm begging you. All right? I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.